From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Alien Encounters. Get ready to have a great Coast to Coast program for you tonight. Here's what's happening. Truly unbelievable. The House of Representatives have made history by voting to impeach President Donald Trump for a second time, this time for incitement of insurrection, they say, after a mob of his supporters besieged the Capitol, they say, on January 6th in a failed attempt to stop the certification of President-elect Joe Biden's Electoral College win. The House voted 232 to 197 to impeach the president. 10 Republicans joined with the Democrats. President Trump has just 1 week left in office, but the supporters of the impeachment push say that the president is too dangerous to stay in office for a minute longer. The impeachment resolution condemns the president for spreading what they say are lies, that he won the election in a landslide and whipping up a crowd of supporters in Washington, D.C. before the riot that killed five people, including a Capitol Police officer. Now, the trial will go to the Senate eventually, even after President Trump may have left office. So this may not get done by the time Joe Biden is inaugurated and sworn in. Let's check in with Howard Bloom. Howard, just what's going on? My gosh.
We're at an absolutely crucial point in American history. It's one of the biggest choice points since the Civil War. You know, you just said President Donald Trump has become the first president in American history to be impeached twice, and 10 Republicans voted against him. Republican Mike Huckabee called the impeachment a lynching. Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene said she would file articles of impeachment against Joe Biden on January 21st. But Senate Leader Mitch McConnell told sources that President Trump had committed impeachable offenses and that McConnell hoped this second impeachment would help the Republican Party rid itself of Trumpism. But here are the four big questions left by the impeachment. Number one, are we going to have another insurrection between January 17th and the inauguration of Joe Biden on January 20th? Will it be what Trump supporters on 8chan are calling for, an armed uprising that makes the invasion of the Capitol building on January 6th look like a tea party? Even worse, are we going to have what the right-wing militia movement has been aching for 40 years, a new civil war? Question number two, will President Donald Trump use a military assault against a foreign nation in the next 7 days to shake things up so he can stay in power? Will he use nuclear weapons, perhaps on the nuclear facilities in Iran? Number three, will Donald Trump do what General Michael Flynn and Lieutenant General Thomas McHenry have been urging him to do? Will he invoke martial law, declare a state of emergency, and use the Insurrection Act of 1807 to stay in power? Will he instruct the military to run the election over again? And will he rerun his 60 election fraud court cases through military tribunals? Then will Trump jail his political opponents, accusing them of orchestrating fraud? And question number four, which faction will end up in control of the Republican Party? The Trumpists, like Jim Jordan, or the institutionalists like Mitch McConnell and Mitt Romney? Now, it appears that Donald Trump has done two things no previous modern president has managed to achieve or has even wanted to. He seems to have pulled together the nation's more than 165 militia movements as a unified whole. He appears to have given them a common cause, and he appears to have given them a common philosophy, the philosophy of QAnon, the movement that says the world is being taken over by a conspiracy of child-raping, Satan-worshipping globalists backed by George Soros, a worldwide so-called criminal mafia that includes everyone from Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi to, in all probability, me, a mafia only one man on planet Earth can defeat, President Donald Trump. Trump's QAnon and militia followers say that we are at war, that the January 6th insurrection was just the opening battle, and that President Trump has foreseen every move. These dedicated Trumpists have declared that President Trump is a seven-dimensional chess player and that he will signal when the time is right to arise. What's worse, some of Trump's evangelical militia and QAnon supporters believe that an all-out war will usher in a thousand-year kingdom of Christ. This may be why, late this afternoon, FBI Director Christopher Wray and acting United States Citizenship and Immigration Services Director Ken Cuccinelli held a 45-minute phone call with police chiefs nationwide, warning them to be on the lookout for trouble from now until the January 20th inauguration. So the next 7 days could determine literally the future of our constitutional system, the future of our democracy, and the future of you and me.
Howard, let's pray for our nation. And I also believe there's no question that some of those rioters on January 6th were people who were planted there, bad actors who were sent in to cause all kinds of problems, and everything got mixed in. But let's pray for our nation, folks, and let's hope everything goes smoothly. My gut tells me that President Donald Trump will go quietly. We shall see. The U.S. reported a single-day high in coronavirus deaths this week, with Johns Hopkins University tallying 4,327 fatalities on Tuesday. The number brings the country's cumulative death toll to over 380,000. Senate Democrats plan to make another coronavirus relief package, including sending an additional stimulus payment to many Americans, one of their top priorities for the year. Once they assume control of the chamber, they want to get it up to those $2,000 checks. Anything helps right now. U.S. consumer prices increased solidly in December amid a surge in the cost of gasoline, though underlying inflation remained tame as the economy battled the ravaging COVID-19 pandemic that has weighed on the labor market and services industry. Let's check in with registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock. Mish, your take on the economic front these days.
A lot of issues there, George. First, new deaths the last 2 days, over 4,000 each day. New cases in coronavirus, over 225,000 each day. We're being hit with these new strains that appear to have come from Europe and Africa, and they're now running rampant. Just to give you a little personal anecdote, I went to a restaurant here in Utah, where we moved to from Illinois.
Are you open there?
No social distancing at all at this restaurant, but most of them, yes. Some of them, it's like extremely strict, and others are like every third table. It seems to me, George, this is no way to run a pandemic, if you get what I'm saying, where the range of support on this stuff for social distancing varies from non-existent to extreme. I mean, should there be some middle ground? Meanwhile, a week ago I was on here and we were discussing the possibility jobs would decline because the payroll report was on Friday. And I think you agreed with me that jobs were likely to decline. Sure mm-hmm. enough, we had our first jobs decline for the first time in 8 months. We've got claims, jobless claims, unemployment claims numbers coming out tomorrow. I expect them to be around 800,000 again, which is where they've been since August. We've made no progress on any of this with new strains coming up on the coronavirus. And going back to the payroll report one more time, right ahead of the pandemic, George, we had 152 million jobs. In 2 months later, we had lost 22 million jobs. We sunk down to 130 million jobs. As of the report that just came out last Friday, we're back up to 142 million. Guess what? We've recovered just a little bit more than half of the jobs we've lost. And we're looking at all of this coronavirus stuff. We really need this vaccine, and we need it to work. We need to reopen. We need to do it smart. We don't need to have no checking at some places and extreme distancing at another. It's a mess, George.
It is a mess, and let's hope we get out of it, Mish. Thanks for the report. Up next, former investment advisor Catherine Austin Fitz joins us. She heads up the Solari Report. She'll be with us for a couple hours talking about your future on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Catherine Austin Fitz has served as the managing director and member of the board of directors of the Wall Street investment bank Dillon Reed & Company. She also has served as the assistant secretary of housing and federal housing at HUD in the first Bush administration. She is a noted author, and of course, her website is Solari, S-O-L-A-R-I.com. Catherine, welcome back, my dear. What a couple days it has been.
So what a great way to start the new year. 2 hours with George and Coast to Coast. This is great, George.
You stole my opening line. I was going to say 2 hours of Catherine Austin Fitz.
I only wish I could be there in the studio with you and Tom.
I'm hiding in St. Louis anyway, so you wouldn't be with me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm hiding on the other side of the pond, so here we go.
Well, let's get your reaction, first of all, to the second impeachment on President Donald Trump. It's truly unbelievable, bizarre, to be sure. He'll be out of office before the Senate even does anything, I'm sure. But what's your reaction to that whole picture, Catherine?
So I think you've got both factions in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party who want to make sure that Trump can't run again. So part of it is trying to cut his political legs out from under him. That's number one. Number two, if you look at what he's up to, the danger is between now and the end of his term, he dishes out a lot of disclosure on issues that the more established part of the parties don't want dished out. So they're really afraid of what he can do to bring transparency to a variety of issues between now and the 20th.
I'm not sure that all the hateful rioters January 6th were Trump supporters. I just have a feeling that there was a plant in there somewhere and that there were a lot of rabble-rousers.
That was a very engineered event.
Yep.
I think a lot of people who showed up were sincere. They really wanted to go. But what you ended up with was a very much a reality TV show. And if you look at what I can tell from what Americans feel, I think they're angry because, you know, it just showed that Washington was not under adult supervision, whether it was the staging of what I'm afraid will be an event leading up to a new domestic terrorism bill. You know, Biden was on judiciary and has a history of passing laws that help centralize using enforcement and the legal system, you know, whether it's the private prison legislation or the Patriot Act. And if we're building up to a new domestic terrorism act, which seems to be sort of part of this engineering, I just think the whole thing was a very staged event to achieve a series of political goals, none of which are in the interest of America or the American people, and are very much of the interest of the establishment in Washington. You know, the covers that came out were staged photos that were clearly very staged.
Absolutely.
There's no way that could happen if they didn't want it to happen. I mean, the policing was specifically designed to let, you know, the right protesters in and let them do a series of photo ops in the building that was clearly staged.
Vice President Mike Pence at odds with the president ever since the Electoral College vote was done. But they've been pushing him to back the 25th Amendment, which would have declared the president basically incompetent to serve. And he didn't want anything to do with that. And I think that probably was a right decision. What do you think?
Absolutely. In other words, unfortunately, both sides have been very childish. And I think that my concern is if you look around the world, you have a lot of people who are depending on the United States for their security umbrella, their national security umbrella, and they're saying Washington is not under adult supervision. Now, I'll tell you what it looks like to me, George. You have covered many times with me the fact that over $21 trillion is missing from the federal government.
Yep.
And it looks to me that all the people who were involved in shifting that money out of the federal government are doing everything they can to attack the people they stole it from because they would much rather, you know, the best defense is a good offense.
And over what period of time do you think they took that money, Catherine?
Oh, it's very, according to government documents, that $21 trillion is from government documents, and it started in the beginning of fiscal, federal fiscal 1998, which was October 1st, 1997. And the last amount we know, because they went secret and dark from then on, was fiscal 2015, the last year of Obama, $6.5 trillion went missing. Primarily from the Army, which is shocking because it's so many multiples of the entire Army budget. It's quite extraordinary.
Well, when we first started talking about it, I went, how did they take that kind of money and nobody really could find it? And all of a sudden, when I've been watching what's...
You remember this. The first show we did on it was 2005, and the number was $4 trillion.
That's right. Exactly.
And the number kept growing, growing, growing. And when I mentioned the $6.5 trillion in 2015... Dr. Mark Skidmore from Michigan State University heard me and he thought I made a mistake. So he went to the DOD website and looked up the financials and discovered, no, I didn't make a mistake. So he called me and he said, what can I do to help? And I said, well, you know, I've never done a systematic survey of all the financial documents from 1998 to 2015. And so he and his students got on. I had the number up to 12 trillion at that point. And he just kept calling me and saying, oh, my God, we found another trillion. If you go to missingmoney.solari.com, we have all the government documents and everything there. And Dr. Skidmore has done an incredible job of really sort of documenting and describing this. And, you know, it's all very documented. And unfortunately, in 2018, while Kavanaugh hearings were going on, you remember those.
Right.
The Congress and the White House agreed together, bipartisan, all of them, to institute something called the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board Statement Number 56, which allowed them to take the entire federal government books dark. It gave them the ability to create a second set of secret books and do that for many different components of the federal government, and using the classification and national security laws, basically extend it to private companies. So now we have a situation where essentially a majority of the U.S. securities market, you know, I look at many of those stocks or bonds and I say, I have no idea what their financials mean, because the government has set up a secret side.
Well, and I've seen how they created all this stimulus money for businesses. Seems to be out of thin air. It's easy. Now I realize how easy it is for them to steal the money.
So for 2020, every year we do scenario plans for our subscribers. And if you've ever seen a scenario plan, George, you have two axes, a horizontal and a vertical.
Right.
And the way we do it, one is culture and one is finance. And on the culture one, it says human or inhuman. You could say transhuman. And on the other, it says they print and we print, meaning, you know, it's time to stop conceding the monopoly to print money to the central bankers. Because what you've got is a series globally of privately owned central banks who have a monopoly on the creation of money, and that is the source of inequality. You know, everybody keeps talking about why is there so much inequality. It's real simple. A few people, and I'm grossly oversimplifying, are printing the money and giving it to themselves. You know, and that's where inequality has exploded from. And so we're coming into a real serious dialogue and discussion about how the currency systems are going to work. And finally, what many people are starting to realize, and I credit Ron Paul with having done this education, is, you know, we have to deal with how are we going to get transparency around the government accounts, the central bank accounts, and how do we decentralize the money creation circulation process? Because you can't leave it with Wall Street and Washington. It's not going to work.
No, it's not going to work at all. We've come a long way since the debacle towards the end of the second Bush administration, and things got better during the Obama administration in terms of financially for the first several months. Where do you think we stand now? Are we looking at another crisis, or are we going to roll along?
So here's my guess. I think the Biden administration is planning on doing the mother of all financial tsunamis. So they're going to pump, and let me just describe what they can do. I think, number one, they'll immediately put out more stimulus. So we had talked before the latest round of brouhaha about $2,000 per person stimulus. But I think Biden will put out some more stimulus. The number being kicked around is $1,400, but I really don't know what it
will. Okay. And they may...
Sorry.
Go ahead. I know that we've got a delay because you're out of the country right now. But go ahead.
So there'll be a little bit of a stimulus, but my biggest concern is that the Senate will now pass the SDRs for the IMF. That's $3 trillion of special depository receipts for the IMF, and the IMF run around the world buying everybody into the new going direct reset system with that $3 trillion. Meantime, Congress will pass something like the new Green Deal, because remember, now you have the Senate and the House. And the new Green Deal is going to be a way of sort of scarfing up the real estate all around the country. Between the new Green Deal and Opportunity Zones, we're going to see a lot of the money that's printed and being printed moved into to buy up the real estate. So that's number two. The third thing, unfortunately, is to do that, they're going to try and bring in the guns. So you're going to see a major, major squabble, you know, with both regulation and law over the Second Amendment.
All right, hold on for a second, Catherine. We're at a break, but we'll come back and talk more about the future and also your top three story picks of 2020. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Catherine Austin Fitz. We'll take calls with Catherine next hour here on Coast to Coast. Catherine, 2020 was quite a year. And you look
quite
at through
very intense.
Oh my God! I hope we never have to repeat that. But you looked at three top stories of the year. I'm sure I could guess, but I'll let you go ahead.
So it's interesting. In the we do the top stories in two parts, George. And part one is the economy and financial markets. The number one story, this is going to surprise you, in economy and financial markets, is the war on God. What we saw, and it's happening around the world, whether it's burning of churches or declaring churches non-essential or off-limits, you can't go to church, can't sing in church, blah-de-blah-de-blah, there is so much effort to convert the culture to hyper-materialism and out of the sacred. It's astonishing. Now, if you pull out a dollar bill, what does it say on it? It says, "In God we trust." Because financial liquidity outside of a very controlled system requires that kind of covenant and faith, you know, faith in each other, faith in the sort of the possibilities of the universe. And I believe that part of moving to a controlled financial system is destroying that trust and trying to get people away from the sacred. You know, our whole legal structure is based, if you look at the founding fathers, it's based on the notion that each person is a sovereign individual whose freedom comes to them by divine authority. You need to kill that if you're going to move everybody into a new controlled financial system, which is what they're trying to do. And so I made the number one story in economy and financial markets, the war on God.
Interesting take. And I'm sure the election was another story, huh?
No, actually, the second story in the election as part of this is the going direct reset. So the going direct reset was approved by the G7 central bankers in August of 2019, and everything we've seen roll out since then is all part of that process. The thing that's driving the train is the central bankers have literally thrown us into the invention room. They're trying to keep the dollar system going, but they're trying to accelerate and bring the new system in. And so the biggest sort of change that's driving every train on this planet right now, it's the central bankers and the going direct reset. That's number two. Number three is what I call the injection fraud. And the injection fraud is we are seeing, you know, there are many things going on with these injections, but one of them is we're watching experimental gene therapy, very sophisticated advanced technology, being sold as something else. That's why I call it as an injection fraud. And, George, it's a global experiment. We've never seen this. And to me, it's a violation of the Nuremberg Code and the Nuremberg Principles, because we're talking about giving people injections where the makers of the injections refuse to tell you what the ingredients are. I mean, they tell you some of the ingredients, but you're not allowed to know all the ingredients. So it's truly frightening. Anyway, so we made injection fraud the number three story. And that's in the section on culture and food and health. We spent a lot of time on space. And I just want to credit you again with that, because 2020 was the year that space really came out of the closet, 2019 and 2020. But it really blossomed in 2020, George. And it's funny because I felt prepared because Coast to Coast had prepared me.
Absolutely. I mean, it's coming up from the Space Force to just about everything. And what do you think of the Space Force?
So I think it was a good idea. If I was the generals, I could, you know, there's nothing worse than if you're running a big government agency to have to re-engineer. So I am very, very empathetic with everybody who wanted to not, you know, they wanted to do their job instead of re-engineering. But I think it's very, very important. And here's why. If you look at who controls space, they control the planet. You know, so The reserve currency for many centuries has worked off control of the sea lanes. And, of course, the U.S. Navy, you know, picked up the control of the sea lane from the British Navy. And that helped explain the dominance of the U.S. dollar. It contributed mightily to it. But as satellites went up, particularly the GIS satellites, the surveillance satellites, it switched to being both the sea lanes and the satellite lanes in control of space. Now, you have Asia coming on very strong, and look how many engineers they can produce. And the reality is, if China gets control of space, they can control the planet.
Well, they're doing a pretty good job trying to control it, aren't they?
They're very aggressive in space. They've talked about putting a economic development zone on the moon, far side of the moon. So the Chinese are going to space in a big way. And I think one of the reasons the G7 wanted China to develop is if we're going to become a multi-planetary civilization, it helps to have all those Asian engineers. I mean, if you look at the engineering capacity of Japan, South Korea, India, China, it's formidable. But I think, you know, the administration took one look at what was going on and said, you know, we have to be successful because we've traditionally been the leader in space. So they said, we've got to be the leader in space, and Space Force is part of making that happen. So I think it was a very intelligent decision.
I'm glad we've got Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos doing what they're doing. Thank God, because NASA's not doing much these days.
I would rather see government lead the way. I think, you know, what we've done is we've broken with the traditional space treaties. We have two special reports available to the public, George, on space law. One of the most fascinating areas right now is we're watching the push for exploration and commercial activities in space ahead of any sort of combined treaty as to how we're going to run it. So we're really looking at a wild west, and particularly the possibility of a space weapons race. So there's no legal framework to manage how space is going to work, and so this is going to get very, very interesting.
Have you ever lived through a period like this with everything coming at us at the same time, Catherine?
Yes, in fact, I did. But I went through it. It's pretty much alone, George. So I had a very successful, you know, I've been Assistant Secretary of Housing. I started an investment bank in Washington. It was very successful. And I had the Department of Justice land on my head in what was one of those unbelievably political food fights where they tried to falsely frame me. It was a huge mess. It went on for 11 years, cost me millions of dollars. And I decided to fight. I always tell people, if you've ever seen the movie Enemy of the State, I played most of this in real life. And it was funny. It was one of those periods where nothing makes sense. Everything's incoherent. Up is down and down is up. Everybody's lying. You know, it's impossible to get good information. I used to be a person who had a 10-year plan, a 5-year plan, 1-year
yeah,
plan.
Yeah.
I went into a process where if I could have a 1-hour plan, I was lucky. So I kind of feel like I've watched the world now go through a very similar process to what happened to me. And, you know, obviously there are differences and similarities. But I would say the number one thing everybody needs to do is get great intelligence. If you have great intelligence and a map, you can navigate this much, much more easily. We had a great issue for a second quarter wrap-up on the whole, you know, the healthcare crisis this year. And the first section, George, we just called Pandemic Heroes. And we made a list of all the best people, in our opinion, doctors, scientists. And when we sat back and looked at the whole section together, I was astonished because there were so many brave, fearless, courageous people who did their best to figure out how to help people with their health, you know, whether preventative or if something happened. And boy, they saved so many lives. If you look at the sort of group intelligence that came together, it was very, very inspiring. And that's one of the defining characteristics of 2020 that I've seen. More and more people breaking free of the corporate media and doing their best to help others and sharing and collaborating. And our learning metabolism is really kicking up and just, I don't know, it's a marvelous thing.
Catherine, should they let Edward Snowden back into the country and just not go after him?
I would. I would pardon Assange and let Snowden back in.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right thing to do. I'm not sure it will happen, but who knows? You never know. You never know.
Here's the message. If we don't, the message is we're too insecure. We're too fragile.
Exactly.
We can't handle open discussion and debate of important issues.
And Snowden particularly did uncover government spying on Americans.
Here's the thing. The government is operating way outside the law, and this is going to be one of the big issues in 2021 is when you realize the extent to which the government is in violation of its own financial management laws and its own laws related to surveillance and privacy, et cetera. You know, people are going to start sitting down and saying, look, why should we pay taxes to a criminal enterprise? We are responsible under the Constitution to make sure this money is spent according to the law. And so, you know, citizens at this point have a responsibility to sit down with local officials and attorneys and say, okay, how do we make sure our tax money is only used for lawful purposes? You know, because this government is way off the rails.
Let's talk a little bit about Bitcoin. I've never been comfortable with it. I don't own any. How do you feel about this digital currency?
So the central banks are working on digital currencies, and I've always believed that Bitcoin was a prototype. You know, it's funny because in 2017, I was buying a railway ticket in Basel, Switzerland. Right, the train station is right, one of the train stations is right next to the Bank of International Settlements, and the automated machine offered me the opportunity to pay with Bitcoin, and not only that, top up my Bitcoin from the Swiss railway station, and I said, I think this is a central bank prototype. So I've always believed it's a prototype. When the central banks start coming out with their digital currencies, it's going to soak a lot of money away from the non-central bank ones, and I don't know whether they're going to regulate Bitcoin and the others to death or let them die on the vine or what, but once you see the central banks launch their digital currencies, it's going to have a very dramatic effect. Now, until then, George, if they follow tradition, they're going to pump the cryptos like crazy trying to bring people in. So the way you get everybody vested and educated to the system is you pump and dump it as they've been doing, and that draws a lot of money and things in. So, you know, I think you have to treat Bitcoin like a speculation, and there are a lot of things that could drive it much, much higher and much, much lower. And you just have to remember you're speculating in a highly political game.
You're pretty spiritual. What do you think of the Book of Revelation as we look at it in today's context? Sign of the Beast and all that stuff.
This is going to be funny. So I was one of those people who took first-year Bible class and really worked it. You know, I read the Bible. I studied. I went to class. I got to tell you, George, I could never understand the Book of Revelation in my head. But the thing I remember, I'll tell you the thing I most remember about the Book of Revelations was there's a passage where they say, you know, the spirit of offense goes up. And so people give offense much faster and they take offense much faster. And I've been looking around for the last couple of years and saying, uh-oh, you know, the spirit of offense is out of control. We are in the last days. So it does feel like that. And, of course, you know, I believe that Aaron Rousseau and the others are right, that they're trying to push a mark of the beast system. And, you know, that's a lot of my objection to a lot of the things that have bopped around and being proposed. So there's definitely a resonation between current events and the Book of Revelation. But I got to tell you, no matter how many times I read it, I don't understand the Book of Revelation.
I'm fascinated by, of course, the Mark of the Beast, and, you know, you can neither buy nor sell without it. And it's got a lot of different connotations that could be looked at with today's possibilities, isn't it?
Well, I just published a huge study called State of Our Currencies, and the subtitle is The End of Currencies, because what they're trying to bring in is a transaction system which is akin to the accredited at the company store. And with it, it has so much potential for spatial and transaction control. In essence, it's a slavery system. It's very interesting. One of our top video picks for this year was a great discussion between Carstens, the general manager of the Bank of International Settlements, the new head of the IMF, and then Jay Powell, who's the chairman of the Federal Reserve. And, of course, Powell's trying to keep the dollar system going. Meantime, Carstens leading an effort globally through innovation hubs to get the central bank digital currency system going. And the IMF is all on board to just, you know, roll out the digital IDs globally. They're raring to go, which is why if they get the $3 trillion, they're going to be, you know, they're going to have real gas in their tank. Anyway, so at one point, Carstens says, well, you know, with a new central bank digital currency, you'll be able to turn off, you know, if you don't want non-citizens to use this currency, you can turn it off. Now, of course, to any financial person, what that also means is you can turn off anyone. You know, if George Norrie says something while you're in Coast to Coast, you can turn off his bank account and his wallet. And it was really funny when he said that, because he was like, his attitude was, isn't this great? And you could see Jay Powell, who's a very, you know, seriously trained lawyer, going, he's just like backpedaling. You know, he's thinking, oh, my God, there are 325 million Americans and there are more guns. No, let's not talk about this. But, you know, you're talking about a complete control system, and it's sort of the cat's out of the bag.
I had heard that Saddam Hussein at his time was trying to get the dollar off the gold stand, off the oil standard, and that could be one of the reasons we took him out. Had you ever heard that?
Yes. So the one I think of the most is Libyan Gaddafi. You know, he was trying to, you know, obviously they had a gold position that disappeared, so somebody was looking to get the gold, but he was talking about circulating both currency and equity outside of the Anglo-American alliance channels. And, you know, this is really a channel wars. For 500 years, we've had an economic model called the central banking warfare model.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is about driving the money through the channel. And as long as the channel controls, you know, a lot of what we're watching in America, I call it pop wars, is you're watching, you know, part of the attack on the Parler or Gab is to try and protect the market capitalizations of the publicly traded social media that they're drawing, you know, sort of flow away from, because that will lower their thing. We've watched this year tremendous cash flows consolidated from small business into large business, basically using economic warfare. So there's a real fight to get the financial flow to go through your channel. And, of course, the ultimate way to do that is if you can, you know, if the central banks can implement the going direct currency and all these different aspects of that that they're talking about doing, then they have 100% complete control. And you have to, you know, you have to do the job they tell you, and you can only travel where they say you can go. I mean, we're talking about complete control.
Why are we able as a nation to print up as much money as we want and get away with it, where some poor African nation like Zimbabwe or something couldn't do that at all?
If we transferred our nuclear arsenal to them and our military to them, then they could.
Aha.
Uh-huh. So
all right.
The reason they call it the central banking warfare model is the central banks print money, and then the enforcement, intelligence, and military make sure that everybody takes it. So it's a neat trick because you're printing money out of thin air and swapping it for real labor and real resources, which is why when we started, I said, we need to decentralize the printing function, because if they can print and we can't print, then and they're going to do the going direct reset, then we're going to be slaves. So, you know, there's no reason why we don't need them to print. In other words, if we want to circulate currency and equity, in theory, we have the ability to do it. It's not that hard.
That's right.
One of the few things we have to do is we have to make sure that we have digital systems at the local and state level that are truly secure. And it was funny. One of my favorite proposals for real solutions to our conundrum came from the great Bill Binney when he said, I said, how do we do this? He said, we need curriculum in all the schools, all the local schools, and all the homeschoolers to teach kids how to make encryption systems. And he said, if you have thousands, you know, or millions of children all across the country and young people making hundreds of encryption systems for their local area. It'll drive them crazy. They'll never be able to deal with it.
Exactly. Catherine, we'll come back and take calls next.